Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today we delve into what is your business legacy? What do you want to be remembered for? Do you have a succession plan or an exit strategy in place? These are all really important things. If you haven't given thought about that when you first started your business, and honestly, who does? I sure didn't. It's time to really kind of look at it, especially as we all get a little bit older, our businesses are getting older. Do we want to close it down, sell it, leave it to family? Lots of questions. So my guest today is attorney Denise Garak, and she earned her JD, Juris something. Anyway, she's an attorney.
JD.
I know what it is. My brain knows. My tongue is
Doctor of the Laws.
There we go. At the ITT Chicago Kent College of Law, and she has been assisting clients for over 30 years. And in addition to her law degree, she is also a certified public accountant and has a master's degree in business management from Illinois' prestigious Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University. So Denise joins us today to discuss why it is so very important to start your business with the end in mind, and as I mentioned, have an exit strategy or a succession plan, particularly if you're a family-owned business. And she's going to share questions that you should be asking yourself. What is your vision of your business? Where do you see it long-term? How long will you stay in business? What are your strategies and your goals? When should you have your business valuated? And how can you increase the value of the business if you are going to sell it? Denise, good morning. Welcome to the show. It's good to have you here.
Well, good morning, and it's good to be here with all of your audience. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, it's an you're welcome. It's my pleasure. It's an interesting topic. You know, I mean, I'm talking about me here. I started my business just because I didn't want to work for other people. Truly. I do not belong in somebody else's office. I had closed down my jewelry business because of 2008. That's when we would see bumper stickers all over the South saying, last person out of the state, turn off the lights. It was bad. So I went back to college, got a computer science degree that nobody cares about but me because I had to pay for it, and started my own business. But I did not have an exit strategy or an exit plan. I was just hell-bound that I was never going to be in somebody else's office ever again.
Right.
And I kind of don't think I'm alone in that. I think a lot of us just go, we're going to do it. We're going to build a business. Now what?
Right. I think most entrepreneurs are just like that. You know, they, in some respects, don't know what they're getting into. And in some respects, it's good that they don't.
Or we'd never get out of bed in the morning.
That's
true.
Right.
We wouldn't.
Right. So, it's something that, you know, most people do not, you know, think ahead that far and say, well, you know, what's the end result of this going to look like? Because right now at the front end, you're looking at, okay, how am I going to get sales in the door? How am I going to pay the bills? You know, what people do I need to hire? How am I going to, you know, pay them? All of the questions that are, you know, those first things that are on your mind, and you're not thinking the long-term strategies. You're not thinking of, you know, hey, how am I going to get out someday? I had only met one guy who had sold his business for about $500 million, and I said, when did you first decide you were going to sell the business? He said, well, I started the business 25 years ago, and when I sat down and I started this and developed my vision for it, I said, in 25 years, I'm either going to sell it or my kids are going to be actively involved in the business so that I can move on to a different business. And, you know, I said, well, so what happened? And he said, in year 20, both of my kids were in the business, and I went to them and I said, hey, when you get up in the morning, is there nothing more that you'd want to do than what you're doing here with this business? And they hemmed and hawed, and they said, "Well, Dad, you know, we don't get as excited about this as you do." And he says, "No problem." So then he went out and he found a suitor for the business and sold it for $500 million, paid his capital gains taxes, and moved on to do a new business. So, you know, that was the unusual case. Most cases I see are just the opposite of that, that they get to the point where maybe it's no longer fun for them. Maybe some of their friends have health issues, and so they start to see their mortality. You know, maybe they just find that life or business life is kind of passing them by because there's so many changes in it, and it needs to have that younger generation to kind of take it over that next finish line. You know, and it's usually in that circumstance that people start thinking, well, okay, what am I going to do? How am I going to do this? So that's kind of where I see it most of the time, and it's usually in midlife of a business or, you know, towards the time that the person really wants to get out.
And I'm so glad we're talking about this because, oddly enough, I had a very similar conversation yesterday with a friend of mine. And, you know, she's not in your line of business at all, but we both kind of shared with each other, we're just tired. You know, we've been doing what we do for a long time. And I'm not going to use the word pivot because I hate that word pivot. But mm-hmm. we need to adapt to do something different, you know, that we really are now more excited about than the original premise for our businesses. You know, we're retaining a lot of what we were doing, but moving into things that are far more interesting, far more current, and just far more exciting for us. And, you know, here you are. So this is perfect, perfect time.
Well,
because I don't have an
desk.
Exit strategy. I don't.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, business owners, you know, are probably not going to be happy doing nothing. You know, so that they should kind of reinvent themselves periodically. And that doesn't mean that isn't the exact exit strategy, but just to reinvent themselves and, you know, to bring some fresh air in to your business and maybe do something a little bit different. Or, you know, if you're doing, you know, a lot of meetings and, you know, a lot of people were before this year 2020 and COVID came in. But then you are doing maybe virtual ones and finding that you are able to deliver the best content, the best speakers. Maybe the speakers you bring in are less costly to you so that you're still making a good living without killing yourself living on a plane and in hotel rooms. So, you know, you still may be able to do similar things. Or you may look for the next technology. You know, I was on a Zoom call yesterday, and one of the people had an AI version of themselves on the Zoom, you know, sheet. I'm like, well, that's interesting. Now, how is that going to fit into things? So always be that questioning mind so that as you go forward, you're keeping yourself fresh and bringing new things into the business, and that keeps it more compelling to get up and go to work every day. But there's no doubt there is, if you've been at it for, you know, 25 years or more, you may or may not be as excited as you once were to come into the office and do the things the same way. So one of the things that I find and I recommend to people is that when they're that far along, they should look at how do they replace themselves. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, you know, look for somebody that can do some of the talents and skills that you do. So if you were trying to manage the entire process, maybe you need to have, you know, a CEO who's going to report to you and take some of that off of your shoulders so that you can become the visionary. You can be the one who helps to invent new products, new offerings, you know, go out to your best clients and listen to them and hear what they have to say that their needs have changed to. Because if you want your business to morph, think of your clients and how, you know, their business is morphing too. So, yeah, I think that goes along with reinventing yourself. You have to, you know, replace yourself too. And every duty that you have, you know, whether it's you need a CFO in there, you know, if you need a head of manufacturing, you need to build in that structure so that someday when you decide to exit your business, you won't be selling the business and buying yourself an employment job with a new employer. Who wants that?
No, I know. Not me. Definitely not me.
Right.
So, and this is all really terrific advice because so many of us, and I'm thinking more of, just so the audience knows, of, you know, solopreneurs and entrepreneurs, small business owners, mm-hmm. not large corporations, they've already got this down pat for the most part. Except for some of their marketing. I find a lot of marketing questionable, but that's a whole nother
mm-hmm. yes,
that's a whole nother conversation.
That's
exactly
right.
But you really do at some point, and I've recently, since I knew you were coming on, and I've had conversations with a few other of my guests where exit strategy, one of my clients is talking a lot about exit strategy. He's a business reengineering specialist.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been kind of poked into my eye. I cannot not pay attention to it, if that makes any sense. And this conversation I was having with my friend yesterday, it said, we both said, what happens if something happens to us? Our business pretty much just stops. That's a cruddy way to create a business. And unfortunately, that's what I've done because my particular business is very me-centric. I have a team.
Right.
But it really is all about me and what I bring to the table, and that has to stop. I have to fix that.
Right, right. It is difficult because we are, the entrepreneur is the centerpiece of that business.
We are.
And so, you know, in order to sell it, you're basically, you know, buying yourself a job with somebody else, generally speaking, unless you can do a couple of different things. One is, from a planning standpoint, I always ask clients to, you know, find, you know, maybe three or four, maybe five different competitors who might be interested in what it is that you have to offer.
Oh.
And might buy your book of business. So just in case something happens to you and you go down, you know, with a heart attack or something, that your spouse, your trustee, your executor could go to any of those and they would honestly pay a fair price for that so that, you know, your competitors don't come in and try to pull all of your customers away from you. So that's one thing that you can do that is an easy step to take. And I always say that's like the first step of exit strategy because there's so much to think about when you're thinking exit strategy that you need something that's simple to start with. And that's a really good simple step. The second thing is, you know, with your business, find ways to have contracts in your business. When I say that, I'd like to think that you could devise a way that people will, so if it's advertisers who are advertising on your show or whatever, that they have a one-year or more contract with you, you know, so that when you sell, you're selling something that has contracts in it. So I know not all of your listeners are doing what you're doing. But in their business, they should look for a little bit longer-term contract because the values of those businesses are always higher.
You know, I never even thought
yeah.
of that. I feel really silly
right.
not thinking of that. Okay, sorry, keep going.
No, that's okay. I mean, this is I have spoken with valuation people, and one of the things that I find is that most people think that their business is worth more than it is. So, you know, how do we find out what your business is really worth? You have to hire, you know, somebody that's a valuation appraisal kind of expert. And you don't want to have a 40-page, you know, brief about what the thing is worth. You want a rule of thumb. You want them to come up with something, and it might cost you, you know, some, you know, $4,000 to $6,000 to do it. But it's okay. You need to do this, you know, before you're starting your exit plans, because if you have a good valuation person, they're going to tell you your business is worth X times your gross or, you know, Y times EBITDA. Now you have that rule of thumb going forward. You know, you'll see as your numbers change over the years exactly what your business is worth. Because this is the thing that stands in a lot of people's ways when they are wanting to sell. They go out to a business broker or what have you, and they get offers, and they're substantially less than what they think the business is worth because they never took the step to figure it out. Now, along with that, you also have to ask this person, what are the things that I can do in my business that will give me a higher valuation? So, you know, that is important information to know. So, you know, look at this as a sobering thing, a conversation with this person, because you really want to know that information. Information is where it's at that's going to give you the right valuation for when you are ready to leave your business.
So, Denise, when you have your business evaluated, and when you, as you're talking, I keep thinking of real estate. Everybody mm-hmm. thinks your house is worth way more than it really
right.
is based on
right.
what the neighbors are doing and mm-hmm. where you live and what's going on in your part of the country. I mean, everything has something to do with the value of your house. So what I'm hearing you say is that your business is the same way. But my question here is, when you have your business valuated, I'm guessing that you're thinking that this is a long-term strategy. It's not going to be valuated, and you can go, oh, okay, well, that's good, and I'm going to go ahead and sell it the next 6 months. I'm thinking that you're looking at this as kind of a long game. It's a long-term plan. Am I far off?
No, I usually ask people, look for a 5-year window.
Okay.
You know, if you are thinking I want to sell, then say I'm going to sell in 5 years, because you want to have the chance to figure out what is it worth today and what are the answers to those questions. What do I need to do in order to get the best valuation possible? And, you know, who are the potential suitors that would be interested in buying my business? So it
I love
may be
that
suitors. Right, you know, because you're the prize, so they have to, you know, you have to look to see the right fit. I mean, I can't tell you how many clients have come in, and this is like their child to them, you know. And so even if they sell and they got top price, they would feel really bad inside that they sold it to somebody who's just going to tear it apart or whatever. They're not going to do right by the people that are still there. So even if you have a 5-person staff, you want to make sure that they're going to be, you know, cared for properly. So, you know, you are going to be proactive during that 5-year time window and say what companies would be the best connections or best companies to buy my company that have similar values, similar culture, because those are the two things that really destroy a lot of business, you know, combinations. You don't have the right values, you don't have the right culture to match up with the company that's being acquired. So, you know, that's why you need that 5-year window. Unfortunately, I seem to get a lot of people that they're like, oh, I want to sell it in 2 years, or I want to sell it this year. And so, you know, then you're stuck with, you know, seller's remorse, you know, hey, I'm going to sell it, but I'm not going to get anywhere near the price that I thought I should.
So are you able, when this is presented to you, after you give them basically strategies and goals and explain how a 5-year window is really optimal, are you able to convince people to hang in there a little bit longer for their own goods? Or do you have clients just say, nope, I want out now. I'll take what I can get. I would imagine.
There are some. I mean, if they have health issues or, you know, they have family health issues, then they're ready to go. And I have had, you know, that where, you know, they have a spouse that has a long-term illness or whatever, and they want to be there for the spouse. And so they're just willing
Understood.
To take what they can get. And that's understandable.
Right.
But otherwise, I try to get them at least 3 years out so we have some window to work with. Because part of it may be to hire somebody who can do the business that you do, you know, to replace you if there's enough margin in the business to do it. And then, you know, when you eventually decide to sell, that person can go along with the business, and the business has the best chance of maintaining itself after you're not part of it anymore.
So I'm guessing part of the business valuation, and if you're really trying to get out quickly for, you know, the very excellent reasons that you shared, wouldn't part of one of their strategies be to find those margins and get somebody in there, a CFO or a CEO or whoever needs to basically take your place in the business so you can still be a part of it, so you can still be in it, but you can also be home taking care of business or whatever it is that you're doing?
Yes, I mean, this is the conversation that has to happen. You know, what is your need as a potentially retiring business owner to be off-site? What is the thing that, you know, is going to keep the value in the business even when you're not part of it? So if it's a CFO, that's one thing, because that's usually one job for a smaller entrepreneur or a solopreneur. They do that too. You know, but maybe it's hiring somebody that's going to be your creative director, if you're a creative business, who's going to keep on creating new opportunities, or a sales manager who's going to keep on doing new opportunities. In your case, maybe you have a guest host that you try to work into doing your podcasts or other things, so that you're not the sole person that you know, people are hearing. That there's
never
more
thought of
depth
that.
Here. Yes.
No.
You know,
and instantly I said, no, it's all about me. So there you have it.
Well, then of course it is all about you. but, you know, it's a good thing to mix it up. You know, why do we think as entrepreneurs that we have to be the only ones who can deliver the service? You know, we need to find someone with your skill set who is able to ask a great and, you know, questions that are very insightful, that get people to think, you know, about their business in a different way or their life in a different way. You know, why does it have to be us? Because I think everyone's unique ability, when you start, you are at a certain level and you are happy to do all different sorts of things. You know, you're the chief cook and bottle washer and you're happy to do it all. And then after, you know, 10 years, 15 years, you say, well, you know, there's some things that aren't as much fun for me. You know, like, I don't want to have to deal with payroll, or I don't want to have to deal with hiring and firing. I don't want to have to deal with, you know, taxes. And so maybe I have to look at, if I'm a small company, using a fractional CFO and have some of those things.
I'm so glad you said that, because I literally was in the middle of writing fractional, and I didn't get
right.
to, you know, CFO, and you said it. I went, oh, she's reading my brain.
Yeah, right.
So I was going to ask you, what are your thoughts about fractional, you know, CFO, CEO, because I have a client that is a fractional CFO, and she loves it, and her businesses love it. So we may
right.
have to explain what that is before we go a little bit deeper.
Sure. Well, you know, if you're a big business or a big enough business and you got enough margin in your business, you're going to hire someone full-time that is a chief financial officer. And chief financial officers are in charge of a lot of different things in a company. For instance, all of that HR stuff, you know, just generally falls under their purview until you get to the point of you're large enough to have somebody to segregate that off to. But generally speaking, you know, that CFO is kind of an all-purpose kind of person. They do all the numbers. They recommend things to the CEO, who is you right now. And, you know, they take care of a lot of those business things and, you know, can look at what is your margin? What's your margin on different products? A lot of smaller solopreneurs don't really know the answer to that. But they need to, you know, periodically analyze that so that they can get a better margin out of what they do. So the beauty of a CFO, if you have the right fractional CFO, is that you don't have them on payroll at 100%. You work out an arrangement that they're on a retainer for maybe a certain number of hours or a certain number of projects or whatever per month. And, you know, but they become familiar with what your business is. And, you know, that familiarity is a good thing so that they know and can give you continuity on what should happen and what the next project should be. And some of those projects they may be able to do as part of their work, so they're not just giving you recommendations. So I do think that, you know, this is a really good thing, especially for solopreneurs, to understand, you know, their business better.
I had never heard of that term until I started building this website for my client. At that point, because I do a lot of consulting with my website clients, I need to know what it is that they know and what they can share with their people, whoever's coming to visit them or who wants to hire them. So I ask a lot of questions, and I become very educated during the process of building a website. I must have peppered this poor girl with all, because I had never heard of it. I found it an absolutely fascinating process that she goes through with her clients. It's amazing.
Right. And I think you can do that with a lot of different positions. You might have a fractional, or you're hiring someone outside to do, technology things for you, to manage phone systems or, you know, computer issues or whatever. That's kind of the same concept. I haven't heard anyone calling them as a fractional CIO, but that's really kind of what they are. So it's really, something that has come into vogue. In fact, for our clients, we have a fractional, outsourced general counsel kind of program, you know, for companies that don't want to hire an in-house legal counsel yet. And this is a little bit higher end than maybe your customers are, but we are looking for customers that are, say, 10 to 80 million in revenue, because they haven't gotten to that point. Legal services in-house are usually like the last hire. So, otherwise they might have four or five firms that they're working with to put out fires instead of, you know, being proactive.
Right.
So it's a good thing for, you know, all size businesses, until you get to a larger business, to really look at and say, what can I outsource out? And would I be better off if I outsourced to someone that's there on a regular basis, but not 100%?
Well, and not only that, but listen, as a solopreneur, and I've been doing this for 19 years, I've been doing my podcast for 13 years, and I'm reaching that kind of, not with my podcast, I'm actually getting stronger, bigger, and better with the podcast, but with my original business strategy and business offerings, I wore out some time ago, and I started adapting to different things, and I'm not pivoting. I hate that word. I think I've mentioned that. I'm worn out.
Reinvent yourself.
And
right.
You know, different offerings, and, you know, better education on my part, and more enthusiasm, if you will. But what I have found is that the longer I stay in business, and the more willing I am to just say, you know, yes, this has worked for a long time. Yes, I've made really good money. Do I love it? Oh, God, no. I actually killed off a complete section of my business, and it was the moneymaker. I didn't sleep well for a while, but I hated it. I just had worn myself out. And, you know, I took a hit for about a year, but all of a sudden it started coming back because my passion was there. I was more involved. I was thinking, my creativity was back. I was like, oh, I had this fresh breath, and I'm so glad I did it. So I guess that kind of comes to my question, how long do you stay in the business? And do you really have to have the same business that you started with? I think you already know my answer. No. So
no,
there
you don't. And, you know, you can also sell off portions of your business. A lot of solopreneurs don't think of it that way. But rather than kill it.
No, I just killed it. Yeah.
You could have maybe sold it to someone else who would have said, this is a great part of the business, and it's making money.
You're making me cry.
Oh, no, don't do that.
I'm glad I did it, but it probably wasn't the wisest move.
Well, everybody needs some fresh air at some point in time. And so I think solopreneurs can't figure that they, for the life of the business, they have to be the sole you know. They are the soul of the business, but they don't have to be the solo. And so that's why, you know, we look at doing fractional things. You know, we look at other people who can do some of that business that you are not as enthused about anymore, because now your ideas, your attention is in a different spot. Your unique ability has become so much greater in another area that you should be involved in a different area and letting someone else whose unique ability it is to do what you didn't like to do anymore, let them do it and let them report to you.
Or shouldn't have been doing. Or shouldn't have been doing.
Right.
Listen, we are not all experts at everything.
No.
I should not be doing my own books. I figured that out pretty early on. Hated it,
right.
Didn't enjoy it. You always hire experts, whether they're full-time
right.
or they're fractional, or in my case, my entire team are contract workers. Listen, hire people who can do what you do, but do it better. You will sleep better. Your business will run better.
Right. That's very good advice. That's very good advice. It's hard for solopreneurs especially to let go and say, someone else can do this better than me. But believe me, you know, you do a lot of things in your business that you do better than anyone. So there's enough of that to keep you busy and enticed and happy and enthused that you should be working on that and letting someone else who just loves that other part and can do it even better than you, let them do it. That's great.
Exactly. I learned, and listen, I'm an A-type personality. I don't see myself as bossy. I like to just direct traffic. But let's face it, I'm bossy. I like things done my way because my way is perfect. But it took me a while, longer than I like to even admit. When I was hiring people for my team, and thank goodness some of them have been with me for a decade or better. They're just so good. But it occurred to me that I had to do two things. Number one, I had to clue them into the big picture. I couldn't just say, okay, do this, and I would like it on my desk by Friday. That doesn't work, especially when you're working with other small business owners, because that's what contractors are, like me. They don't like to be told what to do. We don't like to be told what to do. Mm-hmm. So I finally caught on and said, okay, I need to clue you in. This is my long-term view for this website or for this social media strategy or whatever it was that I'm building. And then I started asking questions. This is how I've always done it. Do you have more ideas? Do you have a better way to do it? They always do. And most often their ideas, because they are experts in that particular part of my business, they've been keeping up on their education where I've got, you know, some good knowledge, but I haven't studied it or kept up as much as they have. Then I started getting really smart and I started finding people who I needed in just certain sections of my business who can do what I do, but they're better at it than I am. They're smarter at it than I am. So find people who are smarter than you. I know that's tough. That was hard for me because honestly, I can say this because I live alone, I'm always the smartest person in the room. Aren't we all?
Well, I've always heard it said that if you think you're the smartest person in the room, then you're in the wrong room.
Yeah, but I live alone, so I can say it.
There you go.
But I did have that attitude. You know, it's like, this is mine. I've just kept this stranglehold on it. It didn't do me any good. So whoever's listening, find people who are better and smarter, who have kept up with their education, who are expert at it, and let them rip. It'll cost you a lot less money. Things will get done. And you can go back to being the creative genius that started your business.
Right. Because you may have morphed into, hey, you know what I do the best with is I can talk to a client and I can get down to the nub of who they are and what they really want and what's the voice that they want out there so that I can bring that to the team and they can bring it to life. So your
Perfect.
Part is like, you know, I can really get to that level with the client where I really know them. And that's what's important when I'm doing my work.
Exactly. And I say the same thing. Listen, I have clients that have been with me for, oh gosh, well over a decade. Well over a decade. And I'm so grateful mm-hmm. for them. But I have learned in the work that I do with them, I know them so well that I am speaking in their voice. No question about it.
Right.
No question and about it.
Yeah, with marketing, that's all very important.
It
you know,
is.
People have to know who you are by the voice that you portray. So if you can do that, that's a real skill that, you know, I would call it a unique ability that you have.
Well, I've heard people call it a soft skill, but I think it's more that you have empath abilities, you're empathetic, you're intuitive, and you're really listening. And I think mm-hmm. if so many of us would just shut up and listen, and here I'm wandering, rambling around, but oftentimes we need to just stop talking.
Well, that's true. But, you know, if you look at the people that you will assign work to, could they sit in front of a client like yours and do what you do?
No.
So, you know, they have their skill set that is so well polished and so wonderful that, you know, they can give, once you tell them what the feel of the thing has to be and what the voice has to be and what is it that the client really wants to put out there, they will do it and it'll be wonderful. But, you know, they can't be you.
Exactly. So let's go back to increasing the value of the business. I know you prefer a 3 to 5 year kind of a projection, if you will. What are some of the things, if you even have any case studies, that would be terrific. What are some of the things that you see that are fairly common to increase the value of your business that people can start looking at now and saying, okay, I think I can do this. Who is the expert I go to help me with this? Do I need an expert? Can I do this on my own? Do you have any case studies that you can share?
Well, you know, it's counterintuitive, but at times I recommend to people to look to buy additional lines, because when you're looking at your company as a whole, there may be something that you have started that is really saleable in the marketplace today, because, you know, that's the direction business is going. And maybe there are some businesses out there that you want to look at buying, and maybe they have a person that is in charge of that, so you can expand that division, if you will. It's not really divided because you're a solopreneur, but, you know, again, it's adding value by you having that, especially, again, if you can devise it so that it's a one-year contract with your customers, you know, and then you have something that is more valuable to sell. So, you know, that's one thing to do. And, you know, obviously there's always trying to increase, you know, your top line, as long as you know what, you know, that everything is going to drop to your bottom line. So if you've already covered your fixed expenses, you know, then look at how do I increase that top line. As a marketing expert, I should be asking you that, but maybe it means that you have to freshen up your website. It means that you have to do more digital, you know, email type marketing. Maybe you have to be recognized as the expert by doing webinars or, you know, online meetings. I ran across a site that's remo.co, which I thought was kind of interesting for as a replacement of doing, a room full of people at sitting at different tables. You can set it up that way. So it's kind of like Zoom on steroids. But you can do something of that nature that is going to increase your top line. But you have to understand your numbers, which is why the front part of the process is important. You know, have that objective valuation person value you, give you some ideas of what you can do to increase the price, who might be the potential suitors that they could tell you about, and what would they be looking for. So you now have that information to go to the next step. Then I would find either a fractional CFO, or if you're able to hire a CFO, somebody that can look at this, determine what your margins are, and try to increase and get more out of your bottom line so that when you are ready to sell, you can get the best price out of it. So that those are the general things I would say. You know, that if they're case studies, they come from a lot of different people that I've, you know, sold their businesses over the years.
Let's go back. This is fascinating. Let's go back to how you evaluate your business. We've mentioned that a couple of times, and I think it's probably one of the biggest things that we're talking about right now, because if you don't know what your business is worth right now, and it may well be worth not a whole heck of a lot, how do you find the best person or firm, if you will, to evaluate your business? I mean, what questions should you be asking? Because I would suspect that, you know, like a real estate evaluation, antiques evaluation, you're going to get a lot of different answers. So my thinking is that you need to have some solid questions going in so you know what it is that you can expect when it's all done. So what advice do you give people to find somebody to evaluate your particular business?
Well, first, you know, just like anything, if you're looking for something, having great referrals to go to is a good thing. So if you have a great business attorney, ask your business attorney, do you know any great valuation, you know, companies that could evaluate my business, that could, you know, tell me, you know, just, you know, a rule of thumb valuation. I don't need to have a 40-page report, that could give me some advice on how I can increase the value of my business and could tell me what businesses, after I'm ready for it, might be interested in buying me. And so you go to your corporate attorney, your business attorney, ask that question. If you don't have a regular one because you are smaller, you probably have a CPA that you go to because the CPA's got to do your taxes every year. So ask that same question of that person. And, you know, who is going to be the best fit for me? Because when I give referrals out of people, I look at, you know, what is the service they can provide, and how are the parties going to get along? I don't mean that I would send anybody to anybody that wouldn't get along with you, but, you know, there is a certain amount of connection that has to go into this, so we want the parties to connect in a really great way so that the engagement is going to work out to the satisfaction of both people. So that's the best way to find that. Maybe if you don't have those two, maybe you have an insurance person that you have your insurance with, your workers' comp, your general liability insurance, and you can ask that person, who do you know that does this? You know, looking just online, you know, you can go that direction, but you know, it's a little less helpful to you because you don't have that, you know, referral from somebody that you know and trust.
Exactly.
So that'd be the first thing. And if you had to go to, you know, the other thing, you know, online, then you can do that. But just make sure you're asking a lot of questions of them.
I would say so. So basically, and we're back to the experts that work with us or for us or around us, always go to your experts and see, you know, how can they help you? How can they advise? I'm always surprised, and I shouldn't be, when I'll ask a client a question because, you know, I know what their basic services are and what they're offering and what we need to build into the website. But during these consultations, I always find things that they know that they're not sharing. It's like, why aren't you putting this on your website? What the heck?
Right.
So
right.
Ask the people you know that you view as experts is my advice.
Right. I think that's really a good thing to say. One point I will say is that a lot of smaller companies look at their experts as a cost rather than an investment.
Oh.
And, you know, it's, you know, if you were hiring somebody full-time, then their salary and their benefits would be a sunk cost to you because then you want to get as much information as you can and have them do what they can do and the best job they can, and that would be your mindset. But if you are looking at, you know, hiring just like an attorney or a CPA, many people don't use the skill sets of those people as much as they should because they're like looking at their watch saying, oh, I'm getting billed for this. Well, if you're getting something out of it that's worth more to you than what the cost of the billing is, it's an investment.
So we need a mindset shift around that. Because, listen, experts, and I find this as I work with my clients, God bless them, I learn so much from two groups of people, my clients and the people who come on this podcast. I mean, y'all educate me every day, and I'm very grateful for that. But what I find by chatting with people like you and people like my clients is that they have so much in their basket that they're not even sharing, you know, because they've learned things, they've created things, but maybe it's not exactly what they, you know, think they need to put on their website or out in social media, but the wealth of information they have is astonishing. So I would say that you need to learn to share the wealth of information that you have, even if it's not about podcasting or web development or look, I have learned so much from everybody. I wish I could share it all, and I try. I do try.
I bet. I think you have an excellent platform to be able to do that.
I think that's
something that people, they just have to change their mindset about that, because if they're really wanting to grow, that's part of your outside team. You know, you're always building a team around you, whether it's an outsource, fractional CFO, or you know, you have an accountant who's just doing tax returns for you, or you have an attorney who's just doing your corporate minutes and annual report. You know, maybe once a year you ought to have a time where you will pay for an hour of their time and say, look, I want to make an investment in my business. Can I pick your brain a little bit for the next hour? You know, and just let me ask you a lot of questions so that I know that I'm going the right directions. I have a list of, 10 questions that I want to go over, and I've given it to you in advance so you're prepared and we get the most out of this meeting. And do the same thing with the CPA, because you don't know what you don't know until you get there and you're in trouble.
Exactly. So let's go back just a little bit, because I keep thinking of things that you've already said or we've already covered, but in a slightly different way. You're talking about referrals, and I think referrals are critical to any business. Mm-hmm. I mean, for many, many years, I've been completely referral-based. I don't do any advertising. I don't have to, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. But I think that so many of us have our invisible Rolodex. I mean, who really has a Rolodex anymore? I actually have one. It's in my closet, my office closet. I am not ready to give it up. It's stuffed full of business cards. So one day I'll throw it away.
But
we all have, and you know, go to people who that you know, like and respect, and ask for those referrals. But who? And you said something very smart. You can't give the same referral to everybody because culture, you know, personality. I mean, I know better than to have somebody talk to, you know, one of my clients who needs SEO. I'm not an expert in SEO. I freely admit it. Mm-hmm. Search engine optimization.
Right.
I have a couple of people that I will highly recommend, but one person in particular is gruff. He's crabby. He's more than sarcastic, so we get along beautifully because sarcasm is my second, my second language. But I know better than to put him with some of my clients. That's not going to work, just not. So it's a good thing to know who you're referring, right?
Right. It is important. You have to match personalities, match what they're the best at, and try to, find the best combination, because you know, all of your people can do the work. Every referral that you would give out is an expert in their area. But are they going to be an expert at having the best engagement possible with your customer that you're sending to them? That's the question. And so then you get into personalities and how will they interact, and will they be able to get the right information from the customer, because they will actually ask and listen. So when you are in a very technical space, you if you're suggesting they use a really technical person, that person may be great at talking to computers, and thank God we have people that do that. but they may not be great at talking to individual people. So with that in mind, you have to kind of gauge what's the best, referral for that person.
Oh, exactly. Listen, I'm a nerd. I have a computer science degree. I'm a nerd in stilettos. I admit it. But I can take it down to talking to Homer Simpson. I don't have to use all of my techie terms. Nobody understands them but me anyway.
Right.
Like thingamajob that's a techie term. We use thingamajiggy. That's a techie term.
That's true.
But you have to be able to speak to your audience. So I've been peppering you with questions, but what I'd really like to know, Denise, is how you got here. I mean, you've been doing what you do. You started, I think, as an attorney and a CPA. How did you you mentioned building your lines. I would love for you to share a bit of your story, how you started it, why you're doing what you do now, and what you're really, really passionate about these days.
Well, one of the things we didn't talk about is the idea of legacy. I've been fascinated with how people look at their life and their business in terms of legacy, what they're leaving behind. So when I do estate planning work, I am looking at, hey, are you interested in, working with a charity so that, you can be remembered, your family can be remembered for whatever you are doing with that charity long after you're gone. Or older clients have passed away, I felt like, well, I did a great job at, transferring the wealth to the next generation as they wanted it to. I've also, saved them taxes legally so that they are paying the least amount of taxes, but I've lost their essence. And so, I kind of devised something that I have trademarked called the Life Lessons Program, where I bring in a film crew and I interview them in front of the film crew about the stories of their life, what wisdom they learned at different points in their life. Was there something that changed their life totally from where they thought they were going when they were younger? And so everyone has a story, and I have a film editor who edits me out because it's never been about me, it's been about them. And, I give them a leather-bound volume with their pictures in it and their words in it, as well as the interview that's broken into chapters of their life. I've branched off on doing that to going on the corporate side, because businesses are the centerpiece of many families. So why is it that grandma, grandpa, whoever started the family business, why is it they started that? What was the product that they thought was so special? What was it they were trying to help, people out with in order for that product? Why did they choose where they were at? Where is the company going? It's a great piece to give the history and the culture, to the business. So you put that on some in the waiting room, so people get to know, where did this company start? What were they doing, and where are they going? It's also been used in order to raise the pricing of businesses that are going to be sold, because people's buyers, they can see the vision, because the vision is already there and it's already on video and film.
It's
so
not just
that's
on
the
paper.
Direction I'm going. Right, because you can say anything, but if you have your team is speaking the words and they're excited about it, that makes a buyer more excited about it, and I've seen that caused the price to dramatically go up.
Do you know what this reminds me of, Denise? The movie The Gift, I think it is, with James Garner.
Yeah.
The man who wrote that is actually blind. He's been blind for, I think since he was quite a young man. And, that whole story was told during that movie. This is time of year I start watching my holiday movies, and that's at the top of my thing.
Right.
But
uh-huh.
You're also reminding me that as people, as individuals, so many of us are now kicking ourselves in the hiney for not getting oral histories from our grandparents, not recording them.
Right.
So it's kind of that same thing, isn't it? It does. And I'm thinking, I'm guessing, I wanted to ask you, when you're doing this process, which I think, by the way, is brilliant. I am so glad you shared that legacy portion of it. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely brilliant. But I'm thinking that as the camera's rolling and these memories are kind of flooding back, that things are being said and shared that haven't been even recalled for a very long time.
Right.
Is that a reasonable supposition?
It is. I find that like every decade is like its own file cabinet.
Oh, I know.
And so if you start asking a question about something that's in an older file cabinet, all of a sudden, poof, it opens up and you can ask other questions and they have a really good memory of all of those things. So, you know, I had one guy that I interviewed that was in his mid-80s and his daughter was there and she was probably 60, let's say. And she came up to me with tears afterwards. She said, "I've been his daughter for 60 years. I've never heard these stories. How did you get those
exactly.
out of him?"
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
so,
you know,
it's interesting. Mm-hmm.
One of my very dear friends, and we just had our Facebook anniversary today, is Jim Tunney. He's known mm-hmm. as the Dean of NFL Referees, number 32. He's quite famous in the referee circles. Mm-hmm. And he's 91, one of my very favorite people in the world. And we're working right now on his autobiography. And I'm thinking about him because he was very good friends with James Gardner, and I just mentioned that movie.
Right.
Some of the memories that he can pull up are just astonishing to me. And you're right, we're doing it in 10-year, you know, in decades. I can't remember if I went to the grocery store last week. It's probably not
well,
important.
Well, eventually you will.
But you're right. And having these oral histories, if you will, and showing
right.
that to business, you know, anybody coming into the, I would love to see my dentist do that because I think he's wonderful. I would love to see something like that in his hobby. Isn't that interesting where your brain goes?
It is. It is. I mean, you can think of any number of uses for it, but, you know, it's just so fun to do. Everyone has a story to tell, and now it's about capturing that story so that you're creating or helping them to create their own legacy. They already have their legacy, but you're kind of putting it to video, so you're capturing it so it doesn't get lost. And, you know, that excites me these days because I just felt like I was losing some people and just not having that essence, which I feel I had after having had them as clients for many years. I wanted to make sure that was there somewhere, you know, that somebody could pick up that, now it's not on a DVD anymore, but it on a flash drive and just put it into the computer and watch the person and say, yeah, that person was real. I may not have known him well because I'm two generations down, but that's who that guy was. You know, that's kind of cool. So,
I love that. And that shows your empathy. I mean, attorneys get a bad rap. I don't need to tell you that. I think attorneys are very much needed. But, you know, some of them get a bad name and, you know, some podcasters get a bad name. You know, we all can. But here's the thing. I mean, doing this shows incredible empathy for you and your clients and your firm. And I have to tell you, this is my favorite part of the show. When we got to legacy.
Well, I wish we had time to talk about it because I could tell you some of the stories and they would just, you know, when they cry, I cry. I mean, I can't believe it. They walk in, one guy walked in and he had been in an accident when he was 28. He was 42. He walked in on his own and he went water skiing with his buds. They were taking time off from work and something went wrong. It cracked him across the head, and he told me, I saw the water going out, or the air going out, the water coming into my lungs. I saw the white light. I saw myself above my body when they were working on me. And I'm like, oh my God, I had no clue when I was asking these questions. So it was so powerful. But that's what changed his life forever. But he walked in on his own. So it was the story. It was just amazing. So I wish we had more time.
You know what?
I know we're coming
make
up
more
to
time.
The end of our time.
We are, but we'll make more time.
Yes.
Can I get you to come back in the new year and share some of the stories?
Wonderful.
Because the legacy is critical to any business, whether you're like me. I mean, I live 30 miles from the Gulf of Mexico as a crow flies. So when a hurricane comes, it says, "Hey, Denise, how are you doing?" I'm
right.
used to it. But
right.
and, you know, I live in a small village. It's grown up. It's a town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going to meet people like you or any of my other guests in my local Walmart parking lot. It's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I love to hear these legacies. So please come back. I'll send you a note when we're off and get you to come back
okay.
in the new year, because I think out of everything you've shared here, it's all important. But what touched me the most and really, I'm actually clutching my stomach. What touched me the most is the legacy portion of it. I think it's so critical to those of us who have businesses.
Right. Every one of us has come into this life and wanted to make a difference or to be known for whatever you left behind. And, you know, it's up to you to determine what that is and how best to share that. We share it every day in our, you know, workings with our business, with our family, whatever. Sometimes we don't say the words that we really want to say. So in the meantime, I would just say put your Apple iPhone on and start recording so that you don't miss some of those things.
Exactly. I really wish my grandmother used to tell some wonderful stories of her childhood, and I remember them. I didn't record them. And I think about that all the time. I want to thump myself in the head when I realize that I could. I mean, this was before phones and, you know, the kind of phones
right.
that we have now. But still, I wish I would have whipped out my little handy dandy. Yeah.
Do that now, you know, these are my recollections of what Grandma told me.
I actually did that recently with my mom, who passed away a year ago, and my brother, who is a double lung transplant patient.
Mm.
So we're all kind of feeling like maybe we need to be reminiscing a bit. So
right.
I have been recording those. And then my brother, because he's a brat, will say, "Well, that's not how I remember it." Well, you're wrong. And off we go. There's that. Well, Denise, before I wander way off into the weeds, where can people find you?
You can find me at my website, which is GearachLawFirm.com, GearachLawFirm.com, all one word, or give us a call at 630-756-1160.
Well, Denise, thank you. It has been wonderful chatting with you, and I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and advice and the tummy ache that I got from the legacy part of it. The good tummy ache.
Great. Thank you so much.
Oh, that was amazing information. And I do want you to come back. So
all
before we say goodbye, I would like to, for our audience to, I'd like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes and honestly anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. I'm actually everywhere. Stitcher, I'm on iHeartRadio. I found myself, I have to brag a bit, on Amazon Prime Music the other day. Shocked the bejeebers out of me,
wow.
I have to tell you.
Great.
You can now, I'm now on Amazon Prime. So just look for your partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Denise, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.